The Colbrin. 2. The Book of Gleanings. Being writings from various old Qaldi books, which were partially destroyed in ancient times. Chapter 5. The Birth of Hermaintar. Hanok had three brothers by his mother and one by Sattara, two were with him on the great ship and one was saved in Megan. Hanok ruled all the land of Baca, and his sons, Labith and Hatana, were born at Nazara, after the great ship became fast. His brothers divided the water-washed land between them. One went to Tirtana and built a city there, and he ruled the western waters. One ruled the eastern waters and the swamps down to the waters of the sea. The other raised up Irica in the midst of them, and he was the greatest. The city of Irica stood for 1,000 years, but in the days of King Nadraza the people made great images with faces of gold and bodies of brass. Children were offered to these demons conceived in wickedness. Then God in his wrath unleashed the winds and they were swept through the city as a whirlwind. The gold-faced images were thrown one against another and were broken, they fell and were buried under their temples. Irica was then removed from the eyes of men. All the cities were rebuilt and the kings were dead, the people had multiplied greatly when Lugeter, he who taught the working of metals, was born. He was the mightiest of kings and his deeds are known to all men and written in his books. Wisdom came to the land by the hand of our father Hermaintar who was called Hankata, born at Agelmek in the land of Kalib under Irica, of Nintersu, maiden of the temple, by Jelamis Hor, builder of walls, son of Lugeter the metal worker, son of Dumath the shepherd, son of Jijitan the tiller of the soil. In the days when the mother of Hermaintar carried him under her heart with pain, the king, his father, had a dream. He saw a woman and knew he had just lain with her but could not see her face clearly, for whenever he almost recognized it the likeness changed to that of another. The woman was purifying herself over a bowl of incense, and while so doing she made water. Then a great cloud of smoke arose up from out of the bowl and filled all the room, and it went out through the doors and filled all the city and all the temples of the city. The following night the king was disturbed by the same dream. Therefore, knowing he had received an omen, upon his arising he hastened to send a messenger to the temple of the stargazers. Two wise men came and he told them concerning his dream, requesting that they read its meaning. Having heard the words of the king they, thereupon, left, going away to consult the book of heaven to discover what was written in the future concerning such a matter. In 2 days they returned, coming in unto the king as he sat within the hall of judgment, and they bowed before him saying, "Woe unto us your servants for what we have to say, for thus it is written. One is to be born of a woman whom you have ravished and he will be a slayer of kings, a destroyer of temples and a contender with the gods. He is one born to be great among men and his hand will be against you." Hearing this the king bethought himself of the women he had taken by force, but they were many and scattered. So he sent again for the wise men, requesting their aid, and the wise men received his words. Now, the wise men knew these things were written of a son to be born to Nintersu, but they were perplexed not knowing what to do, for she was a maiden of the Temple of the Seven Enlightened Ones, which had been built in the days of Susuta. If the blood of one thus born were shed or its breath stopped within the boundaries of the land, the corn would perish within the furrow and the blossom would fall from the trees, so that they yielded no fruit. Yet the wise men were not loath to bring down the wrath of the king upon this temple, for it was one whose god had but small estate yet it paid no tribute to the god of the land. Nor did they desire to deceive the king in this matter, for if by perchance the deceit were uncovered they lost their protection. The wise men, therefore, went before the king and spoke thus. "O king, light of our lives, we your servants have discovered this child, though it is yet unborn. It is to be born of a maiden bound to the temple of the seven enlightened ones, therefore, its blood may not be shed on land worked by the hand of man, nor may its breath be stopped. So now we say unto you, send those who are your most trusted servants and let them take this maiden and carry her away to a place afar off. If it be beyond the boundaries of this land, the child when born, can be slain there and no evil will befall the lands of our God." Hearing these words, the king remembered the maiden he had taken for his pleasure, For while hunting he had come upon her as she bathed. Neither the temple nor its god were known to him, and he had no fear of its priests. The king called his chamberlain to his side, a man most trusted, and charged him, saying, "Go take this Nintersu, this temple maiden, and carry her into the land of Kaithas, entering by stealth. She is with child, and when it is born slay it, letting its blood fall upon the soil in the land of Kaithas." The chamberlain prepared and departed, taking with him men of blood and their captain. They travelled so they came upon the temple at first light in the morning. Nintersu was taken, and they left ornaments of gold and silver. Now, Nintersu was not delivered of the child when they came to the boundary of the land, so they camped there, and in the days that followed men went out to spy. The captain was a man skilled in war and courageous, a man of many battles, and Nintersu spoke often with him. But between her and the chamberlain few words were spoken. It happened that when Nintersu's time was upon her and the child to be delivered, it was the days of full moon, therefore, the child could not be slain, so they bided until the dark of the moon. Then, when the order of things was right, the chamberlain called the captain and said, "This is a task for a man of blood, and I am not such a one, therefore you take the child and slay it over the border. 7 men will go with you, that all these may bear witness to the deed and swear to it." Now, the men of blood were grim men of battles, strangers to soft beds and gentle ways of women, but some among them were the companions of Nintersu during the first days of her motherhood. Also there was one whose father had been a worshipper at the temple of the 7 enlightened ones before it was abandoned by all who followed the king. There were those who murmured, saying, "This is a task for those in high places who speak with honeyed tongues and carry concealed knives that stab in the back, this is not for fighting men." It was true. This was no task for men of clashing metal, it was a deed more suited to squeamish-stomached courtiers, but, lacking backbone, these have ever needed others to do their dirty work spawned through intrigue and conspiracy. Lord, hasten the day when real men are no longer manipulated by half-men. The captain put the child into a basket prepared by Nintersu. It was placed upon an ass. Then he and his men went over the boundary to a place where neither tree nor grass grew, but about 10 bows hots distant a stream ran through it to water fields and pastures in the valley below. When they stopped, the captain took down the basket and opened it, but when he gazed upon the face of the child his heart held his hand. He was a man of battles who slew in war, a slayer of men in combat, not a weak-kneed man of intrigue and slayer of children. He closed the basket and said to those who had come with him, "We will bide our time here until nightfall. If we lose the blood of the child here it will be absorbed into dead soil and do no harm, but if we carry it further, down into the valley, it will fall on living soil." None with him answered, for they were but simple fighting men, knowing not that the blood could have been let into the waters. Or maybe they understood the heart of their captain. The captain said, "It is hot, we have time enough before those who dwell below are asleep, therefore, let us drink wine and rest a while." So they drank wine which had been brought and rested, becoming drowsy they eventually fell asleep. Darkness fell. Now, the ass had not eaten since the morning, nor had it drunk at the stream, and the captain of men bided his time, for he had a plan and this was a place known to him. In the gathering darkness he put the basket, with the child inside, back on the ass. It was a good place of concealment, under an overhanging rock, with thickets of thorn all around, while below the ground fell away steeply, being covered with rocks and loose stones. Only the captain knew how, in the darkness, a large stone was loosed from above, bringing down many others with it, so that stones fell all about the place where the men lay under the overhang. They were heavy with wine, they shouted, they stumbled and fell, one was struck by a dart, another by a spear, there was a clash in the darkness though none was killed. The ass, loosed from its halter, fled and none could stop it. Wrathfully the captain shouted, "What kind of men have I been given? Why have you not brought trumpets to announce our coming? Who can see the ass among the bushes or hear it among the stones?" Then, as lights appeared below and the voices of men were heard in the night, they withdrew. Coming to a place of safety, the men took counsel among themselves, for the captain of the men said, "If you would go unpunished for this night, then you must slay me now. Even then, can you return without me? Also, who knows where the blood will flow? Therefore, shall we not all say, 'With mine own eyes I beheld the blood of this child and know it is dead'? Are we men of wisdom who live, or are we foolish ones who die?" Thus, born on the back of an ass, Hermaintar came to the land of Kaithas. Chapter 6. The Companionship of Yadal. Concerning our father Hermaintar, these things were written in the scroll of Pekaman, scribe of the Firehawks. Generation had grown out of generation, and the Lord of Light and Life had hidden himself, for he knew the nature of man and none could find him. Time passed and they sought him no more. Then high riding, Asborn, came one who was to reveal the light to men. Praises to the Lord of Light and Life for Hermaintar the Light Bringer. He wandered the hillsides among shepherds who tended their flocks with care, and he learned their ways. This was the wisest of men, and his body was filled to overflowing with manly powers. Wide striding he measured the mountain's broad pastures. In anger his face burned like the sun at noontide, while in benevolence it shed the calm glow of the moon in the night quietness. In courage and skill none could match him. He was a child like no other. Before others crawled he stood upright, he learned his letters at 3 years, he could read and write at 5, he taught those who attended the temple with him when he was 7. He was 10 when his foster father joined his fathers and the estate was divided through the women. At 12 he changed the course of the river falling down from the mountains to lead it through new pastures, and thus his mother became rich. At 13 he was sent to the shepherd of the city and trained with spear and shield. At 17 he slew the king's right-hand man and fled to the mountains of Akama. Like a beast of prey he wandered at will. He was the mountain dweller, firm of limb and swift-footed, taking according to his whim from those who passed his way. Mighty was his bow of ancient wood, sinew-strung it sped swiftly his straight-shot arrows. High on the mountains wandered another, Yadal his name, one who lived on herbs and wild honey, tall and long-haired, for no knife had ever touched it. His hand tamed a wild wolf cub and it was his companion, wherever he went it followed. The wild beasts did not molest him and he walked freely among them. Hermaintar was a trapper of wild breasts and he dug a pit at the place where they came down to water, and other traps were set. Yadal passed that way and the pit was filled in and the traps broken. The ensnared deer was set free. When Hermaintar returned and found the pit filled in and the traps broken, his heart was seized by a whirlwind, he raged against the skies, he swore against the trees. He sought, 4 days he sought but could not come upon Yadal the evasive one, the cunning one. His traps were useless, his pits a vain labor. He hungered and because he hungered became less cautious. When he lay in wait among the bushes to waylay men who passed, he was not held back by thought of their number but loosed his arrows and leapt among them. Hermaintar attacked stormy-hearted, like a whirlwind he attacked, but when they saw he was one alone they stood fast. Hermaintar turned back into the bushes, but arrows sent after him found their mark. For 3 days he lay in his place upon the mountain and his legs swelled up and he thirsted, for he could not get water. He lay in a body of pain and his spirit prepared to depart from him. A wolf came and his hand sought a stone, but weakness held his arm, so it could not be cast. Then lo, the wolf licked his hand and departed. Then Yadal came, in his hand was a skin filled with fresh water and he knelt beside Hermaintar and gave him a drink. Yadal dressed the wounds and brought herbs to eat, and so it came to pass that Hermaintar grew strong again. Thereafter, Hermaintar and Yadal dwelt together within a cave among the mountains, but Yadal would neither slay for meat nor eat of it. Yet they roamed the wide mountains together in joyous companionship, and their days sped swiftly by. But Hermaintar longed for other things and therefore was tempted to attack men who passed, for he desired fine meats and garments and ornaments for his body. These things were brought to the ears of the king and those about the king said, "Let us take men and go up into the mountain and slay this wild hill wanderer, this manslayer and robber." But the king bade them hold their hands, for he desired to see the man for himself, he wanted him taken alive, and he said, Should any man slay him, that man is mine. The king, therefore, took counsel of the wise men, saying, How shall we take this man, if man he be and not a spirit of the mountains? I would look upon him with my own eyes, for I know of none such as he. One such there once was, but he is no more. Then one among the wise men said, This man of the mountains, if man he be, will follow the ways of men, therefore let us procure a harlot from the temple, a woman of pleasure, and let her go and take him, and snare the hunter in the well-baited trap. The king said, This is no new thing, and perchance it can bring the wild man of the mountains down to me in chains of silk, even into the city, therefore, go and put your words into deeds. Then a man was sent to the temple and he brought back Heserda, a woman of pleasure, in exchange for gold, and she was taken to the hunters who knew the ways of the mountains. They set off, journeying for some days, the hunters and the harlot and those with her, until they came to a place where there was a waterhole, close by the way of Elamki. They passed beyond the waterhole to the spring above, sending men into the surrounding forest. The day came when one returned saying, The wild man comes. Then the chief of the hunters said to the woman, O woman, bare your breasts and sit beside the waters, use the wiles of your calling, have no shame but welcome him boldly. When he comes up close, reveal your secrets, drawing him to you, teach him the art of the harlot that ensnares men. The woman was not loath to take him, responding well to the task, sitting by the waters, singing. However, her maintar circled warily about the place, but discovered nothing and no harm came to him. He drew closer, and when he did, the harlot revealed her secret charms and was well pleased by the eagerness he displayed. She instructed him in the harlot's art and they dallied there for several days, but the hunters did not come to take him, for they found no way to come upon him furtively. Then, after 7 days, Hermaintar departed, passing up the incline of the mountainside without looking back. The harlot was afraid because the hunters murmured against her, but it was not her fault, and the chief of hunters said, Wait and see, let us bide a while yet. Hermaintar returned to the place where the wild deer grazed, but Yadal was not there, and when he crossed the wind of the deer they fled away. He went to the cave where they shared their rest, but Yadal was not there. The wolf alone lay close by, and Hermaintar called out to it, but the wolf stayed afar off, it would not come near because Hermaintar was not purified from contact with the harlot. For a day and a night Hermaintar stalked the mountainside wide, striding along its paths, but he did not find Yadal, therefore, he returned to the place where he had left the woman. She greeted him warmly, making him welcome with cooked meats, rejoicing in her heart. They remained there for 3 days and she tamed him to the need for a woman. Then the day came when she said, You are wise, you are strong even as a bull, why run wild upon the mountainsides with one who deserts you at will? Come with me unto the king, for he has heard tales of your might and would close his eyes to your deeds. He will give you a house and gold, and I, Heserda, will become your servant. The temple of love will be opened for you and I will show you the delights within. Come and dwell under the shadow of the king, for he is mighty, he is the wild bull which roars over men. Hermaintar thought and said, No, I will not go before the king, for he does no good in my sight. Do not the people murmur against him, saying, Woe for these days, the hand of the king rests heavily upon us, his pride knows no bounds and no maiden is left virgin for her husband. Neither the daughter of a man of blood nor the wife of a prince walks freely in the city. Are not all its doors shut like the doors of prisons? The woman thought a while, then said, Who tells these things of the king? Are their words established? He is the great king, a mountain licked by 10,000 tongues, the king whose whisper fills the judgment hall, whose voice echoes 1,000 leagues away. He is the glorious king, a man perfect in strength and proportion, his body is one to delight the eyes of any woman. None other has his wisdom and knowledge. Therefore, men talk against him, for it is the nature of men to be jealous of those who so much excel them. Let us go, let the king see you face to face and rejoice, for you are alike. Oh, come with me to where each day brings new delights, where the young women are gaily robed and the young men wonderful to look upon. Come to where breezes are filled with sweet smells, where beds are soft and rooms perfumed. Come to the place where life is enjoyed. Come, serve the king, as you are now so was he in his youth, but youth departs, albeit slowly. He is the never-resting one, the son of the Lady of Battles. Come and do not fear, all will be made ready for you, even now the wise men tell of your coming, and men wait to escort you in peace. Hermaintar was swayed by her words and said, So let it be, where you go there go I. Then Heserda gave him a necklace she had brought and led him to the tents of the hunters. But when they saw him face to face they were afraid, such was the light held in the eyes of the stalwart, wide-striding one. Yet they recognized him as a man like themselves and their fear passed. So it was that Hermaintar went with them and with the woman, and came to the city and went before the king, and the king looked upon him with favor. He gave Hermaintar wine and he was drunk, and oil for his body and he was anointed. He was arrayed in three robes, he became a man of rank, he was given a house and servants, he was given a watchman. He became captain of the guards and none was like him. To the woman of pleasure, the harlot, the king gave bracelets of gold and sent her away, saying, Go to your proper place, for you have completed the thing required of you. There you will be great among women, while here you will be degraded among them. Heserda departed in sorrow, for even a harlot can feel faint stirrings of affection through the oft-soiled winding cloth which enwraps her sordid spirit. Hermaintar learned the ways of the palace and walked as he willed, but soon he became restless, for his thoughts turned towards Heserda. He missed her ways. Yet many women cast their glances towards him, but behind these was the threat of the sword. He was not a man of smooth and subtle ways, being unskilled in the deceit which flourishes under the shadow of kings. Though favored by the king and safe under his mantle, he was a man alone in the palace and courtyards. He set out to find Heserda, seeking her at the temple of pleasure within the temple gate where she had served as a harlot, but the priest said, The woman is no longer here, for a harlot, given gold, thinks herself a queen, and the women have driven her out. Hermaintar sought her throughout the city, but she was nowhere to be found. Persisting, he eventually found her at a harlot's post beside the river, among wineskins and men of the waters. There was one who sat with her and he was a man of blood, therefore armed. So when Hermaintar came up to them seeking to talk with the woman, he drew his sword. When the man of blood saw that Hermaintar was undismayed by this and prepared to settle the issue he mocked him, saying, Why should men fight when women are plentiful and we have half a measure of corn? Hermaintar bought the woman from those who grow rich on the defiled bodies of women and established her in his house. The men about the king murmured against him, speaking poisoned words in the ear of the king. The women of the palace also turned from him. Meeting Heserda on the street they caught her and tore her veil off her face, while men of subtle ways who served the king mocked behind their hands. The men of blood serving the king set their faces against Hermaintar, while in the city men said, as he passed, there goes the great one who bathes in dirty water. Therefore, Hermaintar departed from the city, going to dwell without its walls among men who tilled the soil. It was not long before the day came when the woman saw that Hermaintar was downcast and so she said to him, O man of might, when my eyes rest upon you I am raised above all women and now my heart is cleansed of all that polluted it, my body rejoices in freedom and my life is a song of gladness. Yet I am saddened because my heart tells me you are sorrowful and not at ease within yourself, that half your heart remains in the mountains. Therefore, hear what I say, go there once more while I remain here to await your return, perhaps this time you will find Yadal. Her words made Hermaintar sad and he said, How can I go away and leave you here, who will protect you? What man can I place over you who will not know you? Yet go to the mountain I must, therefore you shall come with me. They departed, crossing by way of Hamrama, and came to the mountains high-standing and steep-sided. They searched many days, But Yadal could not be found, neither would any bird or beast approach them. They wandered the mountains, they searched the valleys, and they grew weary in the search. They returned to the foot of the mountains, below the place where shepherds dwelt, and into the tillage where there was a city. It was the time of Akito, and Shera, chief of the city dwellers, was to be married. Being invited to remain in the city as guest, they stayed there. When the days of feasting commenced, men came in from the mountains and tillage, and there was much dancing and singing. Hermaintar and Heserda were made welcome, taking their places among the guests and storytellers, eating and drinking their fill. There was strong drink brewed from corn and wine from the palm, and Hermaintar became overfilled with these and, drunk, he fell asleep. While he slept, a man came upon Heserda and seized her, saying, "Come, let us be together, so I may have pleasure and you may have silver. I know you are a woman of many pleasures, a servant to the vices of men." When she denied him his desire, he sought to take her by force, but she drew a knife and slew him, for a woman cannot be taken by man except she surrender herself to his needs. Hearing the clamor, men came, and seeing what had happened, they seized the woman. Others took Hermaintar, and both were brought before the headman, who delivered them to a place of confinement. When the feasting was over, they were brought before Potosi, one who sat in judgment. Potosi said to Hermaintar, "You have come among us as a guest and a man of good standing, therefore we know not whether you have been wronged or whether a man of the city has been slain unjustly. If you have been wronged, then also establish the standing of this woman. It is said that she is a harlot without standing. This being so, then you shall pay the price of he who is slain to his kindred, and no more will be required of you." Hermaintar answered Potosi thus, "You are one filled with the essence of wisdom, who justly occupies the seat of judgment. I ask with due humility that you give ear to my plea for this woman who may not speak for herself. Denounce her I cannot, instead I will claim her as wife under the Ahuda Shum, for she has dwelt with me for 20 months, and in that time has not known another man, nor have I cause for complaint." Hearing this, and because Hermaintar made claim to the law of Huda Shum, Potosi sent for Anilaric, priest of the great temple, that he should say whether or not Heserda stood before him as the wife of Hermaintar. When the priest came, he inquired of the woman whether she were a virgin when Hermaintar took her. Had she say yes, then the passage of 3 months would have given her the standing of a wife, but she answered no. The priest asked her if she were a widow when Hermaintar took her. Had she answered yes, then the passage of 20 months would have given her the standing of a wife, but she answered no. Then the priest asked if she were a harlot when Hermaintar took her, and she answered yes. Therefore, as 7 years had not yet passed since Hermaintar first took her, she could not have the standing of a wife. Nor could she claim to be a harlot of the temple, for she had left its protection. Now the mark of a harlot was upon her, and Hermaintar had forfeited his standing in the place of judgment. So Potosi gave judgment upon them, and it was decreed that when Gala came they would be led to the enclosure of death and there tied back to back. The woman would be strangled with cords, after the manner of harlots, while Hermaintar would be left to carry her as a burden within the enclosure for 7 days. Then, if the gods willed, all he might take with him being 3 handfuls of corn and a gourd of water. The judgment was fulfilled, Hermaintar lived. He departed and went his way, and the kindred of the slain men failed to catch him. Hermaintar passed across the land, coming at last to the temple of the 7 illuminated ones, and his mother was there. She dwelt alone with only an old serving woman, for now the temple was desolate and without walls. For 2 years Hermaintar dwelt with his mother, but then his heart went out again to the companion he had left upon the mountainside. He said to his mother, "I must depart, for my heart cries out for one who saved my life and whose ways are mine. Great is the love of man for woman, but greater the love of man for man." So Hermaintar came again to the mountains, and lo, he had entered the forest but half a day when he came upon Yadal. How warm was the greeting, how strong the embrace! Hermaintar said, "Long have I sought you and found you not, yet I come again and you are here." Yadal answered, "It was because of the harlot, I was here but you saw me not, nor could I make myself known to you. Hermaintar returned with Yadal to the place where his mother dwelt and they remained there, none knowing what they were, for they were garbed as priests. They tilled the ground about the place, enjoying its fruitfulness, and both were nourished by the wisdom of Hermaintar's mother. Nintursu was the last of the line of Susuta. 10,000 generations had passed since the beginning and 1,000 generations since the recreation. The children of God and the children of men had passed into dust and only men remained. 100 generations had passed since the overwhelming deluge and 10 generations since the destroyer last appeared. Once man lived for less than 20 years, now his years were 70. Once God had walked with men and men knew only God. Now he was hidden behind many veils and few saw him, and then but dimly and with great distortion. Where once there was one God, now gods were as numbered as the stars. Yet the great key remained in the midst of men and it was here, at the temple of the seven illuminated ones, the key of life, the key which was given into the keeping of our father Hermaintar. It is a secret thing, something exceedingly great. It is not lost but has come down to us and is known in our times. Now, one day, as Hermaintar sat beneath a tree, enjoying its shade at the height of noon, he saw a stranger approaching. The man was weary and staggered, so Hermaintar sent his servant to bring him into the shade. The servant hastened out and brought him in. He was given refreshment and his feet washed, and when this had been done Hermaintar asked him where he was bound and the stranger replied. I go to Tejal, for in that place there is a mighty man and a just one who will give ear to my plea, for untoward things are happening in the great city, things which should not be. The people cry out in the place of assembly, but they cry to the wind. Gilnamnor has seized the heart of the king and now rules. In 12 days I am pledged to marry, but there is no lightness of a bridegroom in my heart, for the king elects to be first with the bride. This is the custom come down to us from the gods of old, but my heart is wrung like a grape. I cannot find it within me to give her into his keeping on the wedding night. Therefore, I go to find one who can challenge him at the door of the bridal chamber, as the custom permits, for this is no low-born woman. But this is a thing none has heard of as having been done before in our times, for men fear the gods. I know of none other who may stand before the king as one sanctified. Hermaintar heard him and replied, be of good heart and go no further, for I am that man. Hearing this the stranger, filled with gratitude, fell upon his knees before Hermaintar and said, how can I thank you, how can I repay you, what can I give? But Hermaintar answered, when a man does what has to be done, then payment and reward sully the deed. Then he called Yadal and said, prepare, for we go into the city of the king, and because he was sanctified Hermaintar claimed the protection of Iraq here. Then they offered prayers in the antechamber between heaven and earth. They dwelt with the brother of the bridegroom until the day of the wedding feast came, for the bridegroom was not of this city. When the feast was over, and before the guests departed, the bridal chamber was made ready with the bride within, and the young messenger of the temple went about making his call. Then the king came to the antechamber, passing by the husband who was to wait without. But there, standing before the door, was Hermaintar, his right hand on the pillar, for none might otherwise challenge the king, and in his left hand were the reeds. Those who were gathered there, the men and the women, drew back and men of the king's guard came forward, each claiming the right to enter the combat on behalf of the king, for one man could precede the king but no more. Such was the custom. The choice of whom to fight from among those who came forward lay with Hermaintar, and because he chose the captain of the guard, a man skilled in war, the people were amazed. But Hermaintar knew the man's weakness. No more than 5 blows were struck when Hermaintar, leaping to the left-hand side of the captain of the guard, drove up under his armpit, so that he fell to the ground and died. Then Hermaintar and the king girded themselves and fought in the high courtyard, and it was a fight such as men had not seen before. The young and the old, agility against experience, stamina against cunning, they were both equal in the fight. They slashed at each other until their weapons broke and their shields split. They grappled, They stamped, they rolled in the dust, they lashed out at each other, and the combat went on until the water ran out, and still they both stood. Then they could not fight with weapons but stood disarmed, and this time neither might cause the death of the other. They circled each other warily, keeping away from the balustrade. Then Hermaintar jumped aside and with a swift movement caught the king to him, twisting him so they both fell down into the courtyard below the ground, and the king fell over his shoulder, so that his breastbone broke and he remained on the ground. Then the king's guard gathered about him and a man skilled with medicines came forward, though grievously hurt the king would not die. Hermaintar gave his seal and right to the husband and with Yadal parted the men who stood about in silence, for they could not harm them. So Hermaintar and Yadal departed from the land, for it became close to them and, mounted on mountain asses, they set out on the way of Anhu. Hermaintar crossed the wide plains with Yadal until they came safely to the stream of bitter waters, brought there by Mamanadam, and so they came up to Machur close by the forest of cedars and dwelt there. This is the place where there was a temple to Humbanwara the Guardian. Chapter 7. The Death of Yadal. Hermaintar married Astmeth, daughter of Anukis, governor of all the western parts of Hamanaz, and the mother of Astmeth was Neforubtima, daughter of Hahuda, prince of Kirami. In those days, Dedi, daughter of Samshu, king of all the lands to the north, even to the land of everlasting night, ruled all the eastern parts of Hamanaz, and of all women she was the most beautiful. Now, as time passed Hermaintar grew rich and he built himself a great house of cedar wood and had many servants and concubines. In these, the days of his greatness, he forgot the teachings of Nintersu, and the great key lay hidden, for the hours of his days were filled with worldly matters. The overseer of Hermaintar's cornfields was Noman, a man of Loza, a man whose word was not worth an obol of sand, for he falsified the measure. Therefore, fingers were removed from him and he was driven forth out of the lands of Hermaintar, and he became the servant of one Sabitar. This Sabitar dwelt on the road to Milakam, outside the city of Kaithim where Dedi ruled, and Dedi was a great queen. In the days when men came to Kaithim and Ladar to buy and sell, before the feast when new milled corn was offered to the bull of Yahana, Hermaintar went up into the city of Kaithim to pay his tribute. Now, Jalamishor, the king, had died because of the thing hidden in an earthenware box, and the new king, wishing to know where he stood with the gods, sent for wise men who threw bundles of cedar wood before him. They saw he was destined to reign in greatness and prosperity, providing that he never quarreled with a queen or killed a child. Therefore, the king deemed it wise to strengthen his peace with Dedi and sent his son to her with many gifts. The prince journeyed some days then stopped at an inn a day's journey from Kaithim, and supped there, and while he ate word was brought to him that someone wished to speak with him. It was Noman, and he spoke poisoned words regarding Hermaintar, so these should be brought to the ear of the queen. Thus, when Hermaintar entered the city of Kaithim he was seized and brought before the queen. But when she saw him and spoke with him, Dedi found no fault with him and looked upon him with favor. Therefore, though the prince departed, Hermaintar dallied at the court of Queen Dedi. Time passed and Hermaintar came frequently to the court and he was well favored, but it came about that strife arose in the lands about, for the mother of the gods strove with the father of the gods. It was a time of turmoil, when the hand of brother was against brother, and all the while Hermaintar rose in the esteem of the queen. So it came about that a son was born to Hermaintar and Dedi. While the lands about had been ravaged by war there was peace in Kaithim, but when the son of Hermaintar and Dedi was scarce 1 year old, men came bearing tidings of war, the hosts of the king had gathered and voices were crying in the marketplace. Prepare to die, for those who are mightier than the Humbala are upon us. None shall be spared from the fire of the pit, neither old men nor women and children. For those who came were the children of Githzad the serpent, the cunning one, whose mother was one of those who brought defilement into the race of men. These people knew neither justice nor mercy. The priests and the people went up into the mountain to gather before the cave of Yahana. They cried out to be delivered, they were overpowered with weakness and their teeth shook, their knees became weak. But Dati remained in the city and she appointed her Maintar captain of her war hosts, and he gave the orders. The arms makers bent to the task, making spears of willow wood and casting axes. Her Maintar freed Turton who, because he had renounced his father, had become a slave, and gave him command of the bowmen. For Turton was a man of might and a bowman of renown. In the days when men feared because of the Bull of Heaven, the war hosts of the children of Githzad gathered on the plain and the fires of their encampment were, at night, numbered like stars. The men of Hermaintar encamped against them, and when he led the war hosts of Queen Dati out in the morning light the men of blood faced one another. Turton, the bowman, had been made a war captain and he went out before the host of Dati to see how those who stood against them were arrayed. When he returned he spoke thus to Hermaintar. Behold my lord, great is the host of the children of Githzad and well set in their order of battle. Behold the long-limbed spearman, Kami the mighty, far famed among men, leads them. See the powerful bowmen whose wide-ranging arrows speed from behind tall shields which stand before them. What has Holmes failed to teach these people? Behold the hosts of the Huzajin who are with them, led by Aknim of the firm standard. See to their left the spearmen of ever-mighty Marduka, they stand firm in line, they are like the point of a nail, ready to thrust inward. See, already the horns of the bull spread out for the encircling clash. Slingers already harass our foreguard, while bowmen sting us on either side. Still let us take heart. Have we not ourselves many mighty men ready to give their life's blood for you? Are they not all armed with every kind of weapon and masters of war? There are far-throwing slingers and keen-eyed bowmen, there is tall Lugal with the flashing weapons of fire. Yet we can number our host, while the number of those who stand against us seem countless as the sands. Then Hermaintar raised his voice, calling upon his men to stand firm-footed in line to await the clash and bear up before it. He said, "Think of your duty and do not waver before the thrusts. To step back in battle is to step back from manhood. To take flight would cause men to tell of your Dasyanur now and in the days to come, and to an honorable man the disgrace of Dasyanur is worse than death itself. If any of you run, the staunch ones who stood firm will say you have fled the battle through fear, and your comrades who expected your support will treat your name with scorn. Those who stand against us on the field of blood will speak of you with contempt and derision. They will mock your courage, and for a true man there can be no more shameful fate." Then, to encourage those who were faint-hearted, Hermaintar sounded the loud thunderous war cry. It resounded like the roar of 10 bulls. Then he caused his companion of the shield to blow the far-sounding war horn. After this came a rolling boom of war drums, the ringing sound of clashing cymbals, the loud shrilling of trumpets and even louder trumpets filled the sky above with thunder. Turton, of the powerful bow, and Lugal, of the bright weapons, prepared their men to meet the clash. The war hosts drew closer and the flight of arrows and sling stones began, followed by the hurling of flight spears. Heaven and earth trembled under the fearful sound of war cries and the clamour of war horns, even the hearts of stout fighting men shook before they commanded themselves. Yet those with Hermaintar stood firm, eager for the clash and saying, "Let us smite those who come full of fight and fury to do the evil will of their dark king." Now I, Ankiti, stood behind the slinger's wall and my limbs trembled and my mouth was dry, my tongue craved for water. My scalp moved in fear and my hands loosened their grip through moisture. My heart thumped in confusion and I saw a mist of redness before my eyes, for this was my first battle and I was but a youth. Beside me stood Yadal, the wild tender man, and he said, "I see no gladness in victory, if victory be granted. I crave no kingdom that I may rule over other men. What would be its pleasures to one such as I? For what do men slay one another? Which man seeks spoil and its pleasure and which man the joys of life? Against us stand men of living flesh and blood, men who have mothers and wives, men who have children, men who are good, even if those who lead them are evil. These good men I have no wish to slay, better would it be were I to be slain myself. Not a man will I slay with these hands, not even for the kingdom of the three spheres would I do it, much less an earthly kingdom." Were those who stand against us all men of evil, it would perhaps be a good deed to slay them, but in the clash of war the good slay the good and the evil ones live safely behind the shields. Can we slay men made in our own likeness, brother beings? What peace shall we henceforth enjoy in our hearts? Will not the memory make our hearts heavy, so that life becomes an unbearable burden? Even if there are others among these great war hosts who are so overcome with greed for spoil that they see no evil in the slaying of men, shall we not withhold our blows from this awful deed of blood? O doom of darkness, O day of sorrows, what evil has moved the hearts of rulers that men be slain in thousands for the gain of treasure and the rule of an earthly kingdom? What do we here on this field of blood, we who are men of peace and goodwill? Better by far that I stood unarmed, my breast bared, unresisting, and let them slay me, that I might lay in my own innocent blood. Thus spoke Yadal as the clash drew nigh, but only I, Ankiti, heard him. Then the lunge and thrust was upon us and I heard another voice beside me, that of my uncle, Hermain Tar, who was there, red sword in hand. The press of the foe drew back and in the lull Hermain Tar stood beside Yadal, the companion of his wanderings, and placed a hand on his shoulder in compassion, for Yadal was a man without fear, a man of more courage than Ankiti. On the field of blood the craven-hearted are truly separated from the men of peace and goodwill. The foe swept upon the thinning ranks again, they came like waves breaking upon a beach. They swept in, then sullenly, tardily, they rolled back, only to reform and crash again. As they came I heard Hermain Tar open his mouth and cry out. They come yet again, they are upon us, arise and greet them, arise above this field of blood like men, for this is the day of heroes. This is the final test, this is the last trial of strength, the last effort to cast back. Why this lifeless rejection of all that is manly? Strong men cannot despair in their hearts when facing conflict and death, this gains neither victory on earth nor peace in heaven. Stand as you have done, firm-footed, rising to the battle clash like the whirlwind that carries all before it. We are but men who know nothing of the causes of gods and their ways. I fight for the cause of loyalty and honor, I know not whether their victory or ours be best for the true cause of God, but I fight. Come, rise to the clash. Then the remnants of the war hosts came together in the clash of arms. The cruel weapons struck on against the other, blow and counter blow. There were dull cries of death, the shrieks of pain and the shrill shout of victory, the last efforts of weary bodies, the last cries of dry-throat voices. The men of Hermain Tar stood firm in the line and the war hosts of those who sought to overwhelm them broke like a wave upon the seashore, they came no more. Hermain Tar stood blooded and proud in the exultation of victory, but it passed in a moment when he saw Yadal lying among the dead and dying, wounded to death but not yet dead. He had taken upon himself the spear thrust meant for Ankiti. Hermain Tar lifted him up, his knee under his head, and Yadal opened his mouth and said, "The Great One has given you the victory, and for you, behind and beyond the victory, I see a great destiny, and therefore a difficult one. Be not heavy-hearted, nor let your spirit grieve, heavy-laden with sorrow because of me. Weep not, for this I know, he who thinks he can slay another or be slain by him is devoid of enlightening truth. The spirit of man cannot perish by the sword or be overwhelmed by death. The sharp weapon of war cannot harm the spirit, nor can fire burn it. Waters cannot drown it and soil cannot bury it. My spirit departs to its abode beyond the power of sharp sword, beyond the reach of thrusting spear, beyond the range of swift arrow. Now, face to face with what must be and cannot be altered, face to face with the ultimatum of destiny, cease from sorrow. What is this passing thing called life? This fragile flower so tenderly cherished, seen in its true frailty here on the field of blood. Does it have any real meaning? Here on the field of blood the dead sleep to awake to glory. To the victorious ones remaining alive there is glory on earth. So do not dally here with the dying. Arise, go to your proper reward and lay me down to mine. Fear not for me, already I see the welcoming light beyond the veil. We shall meet again. Thus Yadal departed from earth and he was laid to rest in glory. He sleeps among the hills and trees, among the wild birds and beasts which were his friends. These words are cut on his tomb: he was a man of peace and died because other men were not as he.